Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Eric Spanberg, in for Mike Collins. Major League Baseball started its new season a month ago, but for much of the nation, including Charlotte, today is opening day. Minor League Baseball is finally, at last, back. The AAA Charlotte Knights face the Gwinnett Stripers at 7:04 tonight at Truist Field in Uptown. And 27 miles up the road in Kannapolis, the Single-A Cannonballers make their home debut against the Down East Wood Ducks, love those names, at the $52 million Atrium Health Ballpark. And 23 miles to the west of Truist Field sits another new ballpark, a $26 million Field of Dreams that is home to the expansion Gastonia Honey Hunters. The Honey Hunters, part of the independent Atlantic League of Professional Baseball, will play their first game later this month on May 27th. All of this comes on the heels of a lost summer. In 2020, the pandemic forced the minor leagues to cancel the season for the first and only time since 1901. And now that they're back, we're going to see what they have in store for fans this summer and what it took to reach this point. Joining me today are Brandon Bellamy. He is the owner of the Gastonia Honey Hunters. Welcome to you.
Hey, good morning.
From the Charlotte Knights, we have the Chief Operating Officer, Dan Rakowski. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Eric.
And Scotty Brown, who is the operating partner of the Kannapolis Cannonballers. Good morning to you.
Morning to all. Thank you.
Dan and Scotty, let me start by asking each of you to share your perspectives on a summer without baseball. How did that affect each of you personally and professionally as baseball lifers?
Well, as I mentioned when we were off air, after 37 years of doing this, and I've never experienced anything like this. It's been very challenging, you know, to start with a pandemic and to be laying off people and going through just a dormant summer and not playing baseball and then trying to reinvent yourself and taking a ballpark that's empty and putting other things in it. So trying to keep it busy. So we're so much looking forward to tonight. It's been a long journey. We've had to adapt and adjust to so many different things. And, you know, long awaited, we're opening day and, you know, hopefully the weather will hold off for us, but we're excited to put our team on the field and play against Gwinnett.
And Scotty?
In our case, it you know, we were building up the momentum for a brand new ballpark in the newly revitalized downtown Kannapolis. And we had all things working in our favor until, you know, early March when everything shut down. And it temporarily threw us off our game. We were fortunate in that the vision for this ballpark was to be not only a baseball stadium, but a City of Kannapolis park. So we did open the ballpark in May, and it helped people get outside and do things that were socially distant and safe in the pandemic. And we were able to, you know, salvage at least part of the excitement of opening. And tonight's the big one with the cherry on top.
And before I ask Brandon a little bit about his experience, Dan and Scotty, I am curious, you know, as you mentioned, the two of you have been in baseball your entire careers. Just in terms of your day-to-day rhythm of life, what was that like? You know, maybe you were going to the ballpark, but you weren't going to the ballpark and having games. So how different and unusual was that?
It was interesting. I didn't look at the Weather Channel all year, which was actually kind of beneficial in some ways. But yeah, Dan'll agree with this. I think that, you know, that's just part of our rhythm is baseball. And, you know, we put a lot of hours in. We love what we do. And to have it all taken away, I think we were a little bit of the lost sailors there for a while. But we're getting it back tonight, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, you know, you're right, Scotty. I didn't look at the Weather Channel a whole lot. It was, and that's a part of our life. It was quite different to be home and getting home in the evening. I would say my yard looks the best it's ever looked because I couldn't find enough things to do. But you know, you just miss listening to the team when they're on the road and being a part of it. And it is a party of life. I don't know. I was just kind of lost wandering around my house, but Scotty alluded to, you know, that stops tonight. The long days come, but we're anxious for it. And our staff is, you know, my wife gets her house back, you know.
Now, Brandon Bellamy, I should mention that you are the only African-American majority owner in baseball. But you also might be one of the bravest men in America because you decided last year during a pandemic that had already shut down the minor league season that you were going in the business of minor league baseball. So what made you say yes to the idea of pursuing this?
You said brave, but I think translation is crazy. You know what? I felt like, Eric, that, you know, baseball was going to come back. It was risky. I was, you know, sure, I was afraid for sure because, you know, you didn't know what the timing was going to be. But at some point, you know, it's going to come back. It's going to normalize. And, you know, we're human beings. We want to spend time together. You know, we want to be social. We want to create memories. We want to be entertained. So I thought it would come back around and thank goodness it has.
And I should also mention, Brandon, you're from Maryland, the Washington, D.C. area. So this was all new for you in terms of North Carolina and Gastonia. Share with people how you found this particular situation and why you decided to move forward.
Yeah, you know, short story, I was actually groundbreaking a big project and a great guy who's a really good friend of mine and mentor introduced me to the opportunity in Gastonia. But, you know, I didn't know Charlotte or Gastonia very well. But he thought it was a great opportunity for economic development and real estate development. That's what we do as a company. So I went down, I checked it out, and I just fell in love with Gastonia, and the people of Gastonia were fantastic. And then we decided to explore the opportunity. Getting deeper into it, we could really see its far-reaching impact. We decided to make the investment. And the mayor of Gastonia, the city council, all the citizens, they've been so welcoming and enthusiastic, and they're excited to get baseball, you know, back in market. So, you know, that's kind of how it happened.
That's the voice of Brandon Bellamy. He is the owner of the new Gastonia Honey Hunters baseball team. Also with us is Scotty Brown, operating partner with the Kannapolis Cannonballers, and Dan Rakowski, who is the chief operating officer of the Charlotte Knights. For more casual baseball fans, maybe we can shed some light on what happened exactly last year. So Major League Baseball played an abbreviated 60-game regular season without fans in the stands because of the pandemic. They were relying basically on their television revenue and sponsorships. Why did the minors not play? I'm assuming part of the reason is because you don't have the same television rights, but maybe one of you, Dan, Scotty, Brandon, can explain a little bit about why the minor leagues were unable to play last season.
Well, I think I can lead it. And certainly in our model, and you mentioned it, Eric, television revenue is not a part of the minor league baseball model. And without having fans, the ability to generate revenue through ticket sales and concessions wasn't there. So it made no sense for us to even open. And I think on the other side of it, speaking on behalf of Major League Baseball, they weren't going to send players out in at that time, 140 cities across the country without testing, without all these types of things. There was just so many challenges that we had to try to overcome. Fortunately, now a year later, we've been able to see how the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball has performed. We've learned a lot of the lessons to be able to make sure that our players, when they come to the ballpark tonight, are in a safe environment. They're all being tested. Many are being already had vaccinations. So it was difficult last year, tough for many minor league teams. I can only speak for Charlotte. We are very fortunate that we've had a lot of success here. And so we had some money in the bank, and that was able to get us through the past year. But, you know, Scotty can probably attest to it, and Brandon T, you know, we're spending this year's money last year to keep people employed. So, you know, it's been challenging. It really has, but we've seen the light at the end of the tunnel.
And I think it's still challenging, Eric. I mean, the whole testing protocols, I know Dan's club is a White Sox AAA affiliate. We're the low A affiliate for the White Sox. And, you know, there's testing twice a week. There's only certain individuals, covered individuals, that are allowed into the clubhouse near the players, and they have to get tested. And that's very expensive for the Major League club as well. So I'm sure that as they were trying to figure it out last year, the last thing they needed to do was to worry about, you know, seven minor league clubs last year per affiliate for the most part on average.
Brandon, does it help or hurt or make any difference being a new player in this? In other words, you don't have any sort of existing protocols or systems. Did that help or hurt or make any difference as you grappled with this, trying to get a team off the ground?
Honestly, I think it helped. I mean, it wasn't like we had already pulled in a lot of operating expense and had to carry it like Dan and Scotty. So we kind of dodged a bullet in that regard. It probably also gave us the opportunity to kind of learn what everybody else was doing. And so we're instituting a lot of that now. So we didn't have to actually, you know, fumble around in the room looking for the light switches. But I would say at the same time, at least, you know, from my perspective, it also didn't give us a ton of opportunity to kind of see, you know, how this is going to work for us, you know, how the market's going to react. We're positive. We're getting so much love and enthusiasm, but at the same time, you know, we didn't get an opportunity to kind of test it and see where we are. So we're going to learn a lot, you know, in just a couple of weeks.
Scotty, I'm curious, you mentioned that your family has been in the game for many, many years. Your father worked for the Baltimore Orioles, I think you mentioned right before the show. In terms of the players, not only do they lose a year of their careers, and a lot of them are not going to play a long time, and a lot of them are not going to make it to the major leagues, but if they are going to make it to the major leagues, every year certainly counts all the more. What happened last summer to players? What did you see and hear in terms of them trying to make ends meet while this was going on? Because they don't make anywhere near what big league ball players make.
That's correct. I believe most major league organizations continued to pay their minor league players the paltry sum that it is sometimes. But I think, you know, to lose that year of development, it hurts the major league club. It hurts the players. It hurts everybody. And I think players, for the most part, were working out on their own. Depending on where they live, they would get together with other professional players and try to stay in shape and stay sharp. I know the big league clubs were in touch with them and giving them guidance, but not, you know, hands-on type of thing. So I think, you know, you lost some players. We, for example, this year with our opening day roster, do not have a single player that was on our team at the old ballpark in 2019. Wow. So that's, you know, some guys moving up, but a lot of guys moving out.
Dan, did you have a similar experience? And I'm curious what you're hearing from the players now that they're back here in Charlotte. I think they arrived over the weekend.
They did arrive over the weekend. It was very difficult. Now our players a little bit higher level and some of them were at the major league level. We've got several free agents that have shifted around, much like what Scotty said. Our roster looks nothing like what did in 2019. And so some players are on their way out. You know, they did work out, but I think an example is we're reading through Major League Baseball, whether the reduced season, you're looking at the month of April, some of the lowest batting averages in the history of our game. The statistics are staggering and people are pointing fingers at a lot of different things. Pitching traditionally is ahead of hitters early in April and May. Naturally, but this year, I think this is an example. Baseball is a game of repetition and the ability to hit every day, to throw every other day, to work bullpens. You know, these guys didn't do it. It's very difficult when you're not structured in an environment. And, you know, hopefully we won't see that, but the test will be at the end of May, what our teams are doing. And yes, it's tough. People don't realize these players are not making a lot of money. They're paid strictly during the season. Some may get larger bonuses than others, but it's not a living for kids at the Class A, AA level, and certainly some at the AAA level.
That's the voice of Dan Rutkowski. He is the Chief Operating Officer of the Charlotte Knights. Also with us is Scotty Brown, who is operating partner of the Kannapolis Cannonballers, and Brandon Bellamy, the owner of the Gastonia Honey Hunters. We're talking baseball, and we're talking it all hour long. Stay with us here on Charlotte Talks. I'm Eric Spanberg, in for Mike Collins on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
In for Mike Collins, and how could I jump the gun on the baseball organ? Come on. Here we are. Ballpark ambience. All right. Now we've got a source of energy. With me today, Dan Rutkowski. He's the Chief Operating Officer of the Charlotte Knights. Brandon Bellamy, who is the owner of the Gastonia Honey Hunters, and Scotty Brown, who is the operating partner of the Kannapolis Cannonballers. Brandon, you're opening the new Fuse District Ballpark on May 27th, as we mentioned earlier. On April 15th, which, as all baseball fans know, is Jackie Robinson Day, the date he broke MLB's color line in 1947, you were in Gastonia for the ballpark's ribbon cutting. And you quoted that day one of the most famous things that Jackie Robinson ever said, which is, "A life is not important except in the impact it has on other lives." So what did that day, and what does this experience, the uniqueness of your status in the game, what does that mean to you? Have you had a chance to kind of let that soak in yet?
Yeah, to some degree. It was a fantastic day for us. I was personally satisfied. You know, I felt, you know, that we're just making so much progress, and I was excited to be at the forefront of it. You know, the citizens of Gastonia have been super supportive of us, and that's just a quote that I really believe in. I always, you know, the way I live my life is, you know, I think that you should try to live in a way that inspires other people the way you get inspired by people. And so Jackie Robinson led that kind of life.
And Brandon, how do you think this is going to impact Gastonia and the larger region? What kind of difference do you think it will make?
You know what? I think development is moving west in the Charlotte metro area, and it's moving toward Gastonia. And I think that we're just trying to offer an option. There are a lot of fantastic options in the market. You know, Dan is doing down in Charlotte and all these other great opportunities. We just want to provide something that maybe helps with, you know, less traffic. You know, we could consolidate the entertainment dollar of, you know, of the folks that live there going west that love baseball. We think it's truly catalytic, and it can help spur the revitalization and economic development in downtown Gastonia, kind of like, you know, what Scott's got going on in Kannapolis. You know, we think it makes a lot of sense. You know, the fruit will bear out, but we feel pretty confident about it.
So Dan and Scotty, as all of you have alluded to, as much struggle as there was in 2020, we finally have some light at the end of the tunnel. And for the two of you, it starts tonight. So with these season openers, for each of you, what's it going to look like for the fans coming back to the ballpark? How is the experience going to be the same? And how might it be a little bit different given all that we've been through in the past year?
I think that, you know, obviously we're going to have limited capacity due to COVID. In Dan's case, in our case, we're not only governed by state executive orders, but also Major League Baseball. And Major League Baseball's requirements are more stringent than the state of North Carolina, believe it or not. So, you know, you're going to have masks. You have to wear a mask to get in. You're supposed to wear a mask when you're not actively eating and drinking. We have socially distant seating pods. We expect, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of a little over 2,000 tonight. And we think that that will be our largest crowd to date. We have done 3 college games and 1 high school game as tune-ups. But I think for our fans that have been enjoying this Atrium Health Ballpark as a city park, they're going to see all of our concessions in action. They're going to see all of our tents and all of the fun that comes with our brand. And I think people are really looking forward to that.
Dan, before you tell us a little bit about what's going to be happening at Truist Field, Scotty, I did want to follow up in terms of, you mentioned you've had a couple of dress rehearsals with college and high school baseball. What did you learn? What did you find out in terms of how the park operates and what you need to tweak and what fans really like?
Well, we learned that we need more staff, which I think has been a challenge for everybody in the hospitality industry. And that's what we're in. It's sports business, but it's also hospitality. We were able to tweak some, you know, some line queuing and try to move the fans better through concession lines and you know, see how social distancing would work within the seats, let our ushers gently check tickets and make sure people are where they're supposed to be. So we really had, it was a nice fine tuning. And this will be our biggest crowd to date this evening. So I'm sure we'll have some more to do, but we learned a lot, and we've gone into the building over the last year. We've used most of the systems, but we've never had it go full bore, and we won't necessarily tonight, but we learned a lot from those exercises.
And Dan, this is what, is this year 8 for Truist Field uptown?
It's eighth with an asterisk because last year was gone. But it is 8 years in uptown, and much like the Scotty situation with Major League Baseball protocols, really strict guidelines as far as players getting on the field and accessibility to other people. I mean, you're going to have a national anthem sung in center field outside. You know, it's just quite different, but it's better than nothing. You know, we're allowed 50% capacity, but with the pods, the way they're set up here in this beautiful 10,500 seat or capacity stadium, we're going to have a little under 3,000. We can't do 50% in social distance, so it'll be different, but it's better than zero. Look, at we went through 7% at a holiday time when we were doing events. So it's better than nothing, but we're used to having 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 people here, and it'll be different. But look, I'm just thankful that we're playing. We've been fortunate that we haven't had really anyone close to us in our organization that have been touched by COVID, but it has made a lot of changes to the way we do things. We're contactless, we're cashless, we're touchless. I mean, I don't know, you're just going to walk in with your hands in your pocket and watch a game. I mean, it's crazy, you know. But these are all, you know, this is going to the future, a lot of digital stuff, digital programs, digital pocket schedules. But the game is the same, you know. It's going to be interesting. People are hungry to get out. Everything that we've done here, we've had college baseball, much like Scotty, and I think Brandon's had some events over there. You just see a different expression when you can get through the mask, the expression of joy. And I said earlier, you know, we took for granted a lot of things that we now will not take for granted. The ability to visit with family and friends and socially interact. You know, I'm not going to take that for granted in the future. And I think this is, we're going to see this starting tonight. And I think this is going to carry through the season. And baseball has brought people together for years and years. And I think this year we're going to see that more than ever.
Brandon, I'm curious for you in terms of your start, May 27th, a little bit later, the governor has said North Carolina could be at 100% capacity by June 1st. So does that naturally help you? Do you know what capacity you will start at for those last few days of May?
Yeah, we're still gonna remain at 50% capacity and have the ability to social distance accordingly. Also, too, to be honest, we have had a few events, as Dan mentioned, but we also want that infrastructure to harden, right? So, you know, going full bore, you know, it kind of helps us a little bit because it lets us get a few days under our belt, you know, to just work the bugs out. You know, our teams, our food concessions are going to be great. I mean, we got a lot of great people, but, you know, we haven't had the opportunity to stress test it. And this is going to be that. And so I think us trying to stay closer with the 50% capacity levels is actually going to help us out a little bit and give us the opportunity to begin to jog before we start sprinting.
Scotty, I'm sorry. I think you wanted to say something. I cut you off. I apologize.
Oh, no worries. No worries. One of the things I want to say that's going to be different, and the allure of minor league baseball for all three of us, is the approachability that it offers to the fans with our players and autographs and things like that. I heard Dan speaking earlier, and it was, you know, we have to have a buffer zone so that fans can't sit within a certain distance of our players. And, you know, I know it's going to be an educational process to tell fans that you can't get an autograph this year, at least to start, because that's what kids want. It's hard to explain to them. We can't do on-field promotions, which is what minor league baseball is known for. Dan talked about the anthem and the outfielder on the video board. It's going to change, but I think we'll revert to making the fans the star of the game and do our entertainment in the grandstand, seating bowl, and then even outside.
That's the voice of Scotty Brown. He's operating partner of the Kannapolis Cannonballers. Also with us today is Dan Rakowski from the Charlotte Knights and Brandon Bellamy, owner of the Gastonia Honey Hunters. Dan, you mentioned just a few minutes ago, fans are hungry. Well, as any baseball fan knows, the key to a successful ballpark visit is caloric intake. And last week I was out at Truist Field as Dan, you were introducing some of your new menu items for 2021. So let's get to the heart of the matter. What are you serving up this summer out there at the ballpark?
All vegan food.
This man is going out of business.
Yeah. I'll bury this franchise in a hurry. You know, but Eric, that is a part of the experience for all of our ballparks, especially baseball. I don't get it. I never have. You know, I'll go on the road and I'll be eating, go to watch a game in you know, Durham or something. I'm eating peanuts and I'm, why am I doing this? I don't know. But the allure of it, the, you know, the hot dogs, we've got several local vendors, Max Speed Shop, for example, with ribs. It's known, you know, regionally, and it's really special. And it's amazing. You know, baseball used to be hot dogs, Cracker Jacks, like the song goes. It's now, you know, going into it. You know, if you go to our buffet and there's salads, there's, you know, there's something for everyone. And, you know, kiddingly, there's gluten-free items that you have to have on the menu. I don't know. I've never tried any, but hope I don't have to. But there is good food, and it is something that fans look forward to. We want them to come and have dinner here. We don't want them eating at some other restaurant and coming to the ballpark. We want them coming and eating here.
And Brandon, for you and for Scotty, these are new ballparks. The pressure is on. You got to have a clutch hitter. So in this case, what's going on with the chef at the ballpark?
I'll go first because mine's is shorter. You know, we've got an announcement or two coming out in about the next 48 hours. We've got a lot of menu tasting going on. You know, that was the phrase, keep it simple, stupid. You know, some really good hot dogs, no gluten-free stuff. And hopefully the fans are going to be excited. But, you know, we just want to keep the staples on there and do those really well, figure out how things are going from there, and then try to get creative after that. But right now we want to play it safe.
Scotty, what's the strategy up there in Kannapolis with the menu?
Well, we rebranded a couple years ago and became the Kannapolis Cannonballers. And our whole vibe that we want to try to create in the ballpark is State Fair Carnival Circus. So you're going to see things like corn dogs, roasted corn, you know, of course, the staples like footlong hot dogs, funnel cakes, all of those sorts of things. We really want to highlight the show that is around and surrounding the field. So there will be some surprises that haven't been on our menu as a city park that people will see for the first time tonight.
And Scotty, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned the Intimidators. Obviously the team had that name for roughly 20 years, I think 19 years, maybe. The late NASCAR star Dale Earnhardt Sr. was part of the ownership group at one time. And the Intimidator nickname, of course, was his. And you did switch names, although your current mascot has the mustache that looks very suspiciously similar to Dale Earnhardt's. But take
no
us
comment.
Through. I understand. Take us through a little bit of what that was like in terms of having an existing team and introducing a new name and logo and going through that process.
Well, you know, change is hard for everybody in every situation. And certainly changing a name tends to, you know, inflame the fan base somewhat, but it also brings attention to the fact that, you know, that you are there and that you do matter to the community. We didn't own the name Intimidators. So that when we went into this new ballpark and we were going to be putting up brand new signage and all these things, we didn't want to get into a situation where a couple years down the road, we might have to change the name and change all of that. And we also thought it was time to freshen up the brand a bit. New ballpark, new excitement. Things had gotten a little stale at the old ballpark. So at first it was not received. The change, the fact that we were changing wasn't received well, but once we revealed what that change was, even Dale Earnhardt Jr. came around to our side of the coin and really liked that we were paying homage to the history of Cannon Mills and why Kannapolis exists in the first place.
Now, is that B? Could there be a number three, an Earnhardt-esque number three in that B on your cap? Is that possible?
Pardon me?
Could there be a number three hidden in that B on your Cannonballers cap?
You know, I'm not an artist, Eric, but I guess, you know, there's artistic license out there. Whatever you see in there is you know, what you see.
Good answer, Scott.
That's
good
right. So what it is, it's a Rorschach test. Anyone who's up there buying Kannapolis gear, just know that going in. Brandon, you had a little bit different situation. This is a new team. So you didn't have the history to grapple with, but you have to come up with a catchy name, and gear and hats are such a big part of the experience and the business. How did you approach this? How did you wind up with the Honey Hunters?
Yeah, it was a combination of a variety of things. We had a community contest, and we got a bunch of great names from that. We did a lot of research from the area. We had a ton of focus groups. There's a lot of rich baseball history in Gastonia. So people, you know, they had a lot of opinions about it, and through the trademark process and coming up with something, and really researching a lot of historical issues, we came up with the Honey Hunters, a honey badger, which is fearless, determined, and resilient. And, you know, there was an American hero that came out of Gastonia, Gaston County. And he was a landowner, and he was philanthropic, and he owned businesses. And he said, always strive to be better, but never forget where you came from. And as a landowner myself, and an entrepreneur, and philanthropic endeavors that I get into, it resonated with me. And his name was Ransom Hunter. You know, he was the first freed slave from Gaston County. And so, you know, all of those things, you know, just intersected. And it was just a lot of fun with the badger. And we work with Brandios, a company out of California, and they came up with this logo, which is, you know, I'm a big fan of it. Some of the community didn't love the name at first, but everybody loved the logo. Right?
So you're halfway there.
We're winning them over. Look, man, we just got to have some stamina and some endurance right now.
And Dan, you've been through this to an extent, because when you moved uptown, you kept the Knights name, but you certainly took on a new look and a new logo. And how did it turn out in the end? How long did it take for people to accept it?
Well, I think ours was different. We had a certain segment that wanted us to change the name. I was very adamant. It was one of the few, not disagreements, the differences of opinions that I had with my owner, Don Beaver, that I actually won. He wanted to change the name, but I felt so compelled to make sure that we kept the Knights name, because our history here, the Charlotte Knights being at Fort Mill, you know, naturally, they weren't the Fort Mill Knights, they were Charlotte. And our effort was to come back to Charlotte, come back home. And we weren't relocating another team. We were relocating the Knights. And so I felt it was really important. But like Brandon and Scotty, you got to rebrand the look. I mean, we're about merchandise sales. We're about longevity. Ours is more simple, but we hope it's longstanding. Everyone has a different opinion. There's not a right or wrong in any of this. But it is about merchandising and identifying with your community. And
we'll be right back on Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
On Charlotte Talks, I'm Eric Spanberg, in for Mike Collins, and those are the sounds that we're going to hear starting tonight with the Charlotte Knights starting their minor league season, and the Kannapolis Cannonballers starting their minor league season, and the Gastonia Honey Hunters are not far behind. May 27th will be their first pitch, and with me today, I have Dan Rakowski. He's the Chief Operating Officer of the Charlotte Knights. Brandon Bellamy is the owner of the Gastonia Honey Hunters, and Scotty Brown is Operating Partner of the Kannapolis Cannonballers. I wanted to ask the three of you about something that has always gone along with minor league baseball in terms of it as a business. It's always been about family entertainment. It's been about affordability. It's been about a fun night out for young working professionals. It might be more about the beer selection, perhaps, and who else is in the ballpark. But it's never really been about who wins and loses. That's not been a big part of the equation. And I want to ask, do you think that will change, and does it need to change, in your opinion, as you start a new season here in 2021? Dan, you want to start us off as the veteran? Dan, I'm not sure if we can hear you. Dan, I think you're muted.
I knew I'd be the first.
Well, we got to have a 2020-21 moment. Go ahead.
Yeah, we got to have that. Sorry. No, certainly we are a business. You know, we've learned that through COVID, that we've had to be creative and do other things. You know, all of us have significant investments in our ballpark. And so, you know, I think us moving forward, some of the adjustments we had to make in order to generate revenue when baseball wasn't here are here to stay. And that's Christmas Village type things and making your facility multi-use, whether it's college baseball or high school baseball. I think of Brandon's situation, you've got soccer and football, and it, you know, our building's got to be used more than the, well, we got 60 nights, but 70 nights a year. And you know, these are expensive buildings to run. We own our building, so it's even more expensive than others, but you know, you got big leases and you got governments that are investing money into these facilities. And I think what you got to do in return is put baseball is certainly primary, but you're putting your other events into your venue.
Yep, Brandon, Dan just mentioned some of the things that you're looking at doing in the ballpark. Take us through the strategy and what you're planning in terms of things outside of just the Gastonia Honey Hunters.
Yeah, as Dan mentioned, he's right on the money. The city of Gastonia designed a multi-purpose sports and entertainment facility. And the idea is to have that be the center of community. The same way Kannapolis opened up their facility, it was like the city park. You know, this is to be ground zero for the Fuse District, which is where the property is. So our plan is obviously to be anchored by baseball. I mean, that's, you know, you got to get that right. That's our primary focus. But we want to have, you know, football and soccer and lacrosse. So we get to have all of those events there. We're going to be having concerts as well. We know other parks have done that, but we're going to push on that a little bit more aggressively. And it's set up for that. We've got a full stage and, you know, flooring, and we get the opportunity to treat this facility as a quick change facility, you know, where, you know, given the time it takes to set up and break down, included in the analysis, you know, what other things can we bring that can get folk out and really generate that pedestrian traffic that we need? You know, just like a shopping center, you know, you have a big shopping center, it gets anchored by a grocery store or some big box user, right? The idea is that they create the gravity and it brings people there, they get used to coming there, and it trains them in that way. We believe that multi-purpose sports and entertainment facilities like the Fuse is exactly like that, and other parks around the country, you know, if they didn't have to be more creative in how they use the building, I think the last, you know, 13 months, you know, forced them to do that. I think that sea change, you're going to see it more regularly, because you do need to get more usage out of the buildings than just the 60 or 70, you know, homestands that you would have in baseball. You've got, you know, another, you know, 150 days, you know, that you could really do other things. And if planned appropriately, I think it's good for the ballpark, it's good for the bottom line, and I think it's good for the communities that those buildings are in.
Scotty, what about you? What's the strategy at Atrium Health Ballpark?
Yeah, following up on Brandon, you know, 60 games is a lot of games, but it's not 365 days in a year. We really had to shift gears last year to keep our people employed, and everybody became a food service employee. So we opened up our premium club as a restaurant, and we were servers and we were cooks, and we were in the concession stand slinging fries. It allowed us to take about a quarter of our projected revenues in year one and get those back between that and merchandise. It proved to us that you can do other things. We didn't have a whole lot of structured events because people couldn't gather. But since things have loosened up already, we've had a couple weddings. We're doing 4 high school graduations coming up when the team's on the road. Certainly once capacities grow, we'll look at some concerts and some other things. It's not lip service anymore in our industry. You've got to use your facility year round.
Dan, it's interesting. I was out there at your ballpark a couple months ago, and you turned to one of your colleagues and you said, hey, did you sign up to work in a pumpkin patch? And you were just making the point of all these different kinds of events that you did last summer. Take us through some of the things that people may not normally associate with the minor league ballpark that you did to kind of fill the time and try and keep those employees on the payroll.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I don't run a baseball team anymore. I ran a pumpkin patch and weddings and Christmas village. And we actually sold chicken out in front of the, we had a truck of chicken. And God, we made about 20 grand just selling it off the street. You know, it made us think, and, you know, I use this phrase, and it's not to be smart, but, you know, things were brought to me in the past. And I'd say, you know, that's a lot of work to make 10 grand, you know, and not to be snobbish about it, but I go, yeah, now that's what we're taking. And we had 2 graduations, Queens College and Johnson & Wales this past weekend. And we did in the off season. I wanted to keep as many people as employed as I could. I laid off a third of my staff, and I had a pretty significant size staff here in Charlotte. But you know, you want to keep people working. You got to justify what they're doing. And to Scotty's point, people got into the baseball business, and they're out on the field on Halloween time with 2,000 pumpkins on our outfield selling pumpkins. But look at it, worked. You know, and it was fun. I actually, you know, some of these things were fun to do.
That's the voice of Dan Rakowski. He is the chief operating officer and Prince of Pumpkins with the Charlotte Knights. Scotty Brown, the operating partner with the Kannapolis Cannonballers, and Brandon Bellamy, owner of the Gastonia Honey Hunters, are all with us. Brandon, you alluded to this a little bit, which is this idea of baseball and real estate. And certainly you are emblematic of that. Your main business is as a real estate developer. Your company is called Velocity Companies up in the Maryland, Washington, D.C. area. Let's start with you in terms of using baseball to build out a district with entertainment and restaurants and commercial space. What's your vision and how is it going so far in terms of that interest from private investors?
You know what? That is what we do. We're seeing it all around the country. What Atlanta Braves has done, what's happening in Kannapolis. You know, we know that it makes sense, and it makes sense for a couple of peripheral reasons as well. In the real estate space right now, retail is a completely different animal. Right. Mm-hmm. You can walk through your house and order one stick of deodorant and it just shows up magically a day or so later. So you don't need the same type of retail. Last mile convenience retail works. Food and beverage retail is going to work. And entertainment, it's going to work. People are always going to want to do those things, even though the rest of it's transformed. So if you want to live, work and play downtown, if you want to live, work and play area, you're going to have to combine a variety of different uses together. And sports and entertainment anchored real estate is what you're going to see a lot more of. It it's going to proliferate. It has to. Obviously there'll be a lot of there'll be a lot more competition as far as food and beverage in the market, because you know those things have to work together, and then you'll have other food and beverage around that. When it's oversaturation after the synchronicity of those uses, then the other guys that aren't good are going to die out. But when we see that as a real way to catalyze development in an area, as long as there are a few other demographic factors there that make sense. And baseball has, you know, the most games. It's well-loved, it has the most games. There are a lot of other peripheral retail that can support it. And you're gonna drive that. You need pedestrian traffic to make a live, work and play district work. Hopefully that attracts office in whatever form or shape that's gonna take in the years to come. Because you need either breakfast and lunch traffic, or you need lunch and dinner traffic to really support live, work. And so we think this is a good model. And depending on how things go, maybe we'll be able to do this again somewhere. Just because, you know, it does make sense. And we do have the capacities to touch all of those factors in one project, as opposed to having to break it up in some instances. But well, we think it makes a lot of sense.
And your company is involved in not just the baseball, but the development piece of that larger district, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. There are three pads adjacent to the stadium. Our plan is to develop hospitality, residential, and office on those pads as the market will allow. But first things first, we you know, you got to eat your breakfast first. Right now, we need to make sure that baseball is good, the product we put on the field is good, that it's affordable, it's friendly, it's fun. And once we do that, we think that adding additional events and really getting the community involved and used to coming to the facility will then inject the appreciation in all of the real estate around it. And then you're going to see that. You're already seeing developers and investors coming into that area. And I think that's probably the same everywhere it's happening around the country, because, you know, investment, you know, that it chases return. So when you get to see appreciation come up in an area that wasn't there, you're going to see more people coming. And that synergistic effect is what creates the economic development and investment and returns that governments want to see, communities need. It creates a lot of jobs, and it all makes sense.
And Scotty, for you there at Atrium Health Ballpark, the then Intimidators played a little bit away from downtown. This ballpark is part of a downtown project, again, trying to spin off other real estate development. How is that going so far, and how do you think the ballpark will help that effort?
Well, the ballpark was envisioned to be the anchor of a newly revitalized downtown, and the city took the big step of acquiring the property and issuing the debt to build the ballpark. Our principal owner, Andy Sandler, with Temerity Capital Partners, is also involved in developing the parcels adjacent to the ballpark now. And you're going to see, in probably pretty short order, some shovels in the ground for an apartment complex that would overlook the right field fence, and then first floor retail, second floor administrative space for the team to occupy. There'll be a hotel that'll be right next to that as well. And we have some other parcels that Andy's partners have picked up. So this opportunity zone is what really stimulated the interest in Kannapolis and other, urban areas throughout the country. And we're seeing new townhomes being built, a new apartment complex just opened with 286 units. The heritage blocks of old buildings that used to be the main drag when the Cannon Mills were in operation have all been leased out, and many are undergoing renovations if they're not open already. So it's an exciting time, and it's really neat. In my formative years growing up, all the development seemed to be around the Eisenhower, highway system at interchanges, and people deserted the inner cities, and now they're all coming back, and these are the cool places to be and where most of the action's happening.
And now, Dan, you have an interesting situation because the Knights were in Fort Mill across the state line for 24 years, and you wanted for years to get back into Uptown Charlotte. You were saying that for many years yourself at city council meetings and elsewhere around town, and you finally took that step in 2014. And one of the interesting things is not only has the team prospered in terms of a lot of league leading and national leading attendance, but according to Center City Partners, about $750 million worth of surrounding development has come in around the ballpark, including a lot of apartments that, oh, by the way, have young professionals who may be interested in seeing a baseball game. So tell us a little bit about that symbiotic relationship between what the team has done and what the surrounding development has done to help the team and vice versa.
Well, we took a different approach. We decided to let people make a lot of money off us. Because that $750 million isn't ours. And I'm still waiting for my check. Charlotte's different. One of the fastest growing cities in the country, and we knew when I was brought here is to relocate it to the center city. If you put the pin down and draw a circle, you're talking about a significant part of the population. And as we know, like any business, it's about location. I think there's somebody that had that phrase, location, location, location. But it has really been wonderful. And you're right, $750 million worth of development. Charlotte didn't necessarily need the Knights, but the Knights took the third ward and transformed it. Unlike Brandon and Scotty, we don't have a lot of property around it. We do have one parcel that we have not developed. And for the reason of we're getting this multimodal station, which has now really been a part, key part of this. And while I might not see it in my tenure here, the development of that parcel is going to be really important to that part, but also to the team and how it ties in. At Center Cities are about what everybody's doing. I mean, Brandon's made his investment, and Kannapolis has done the same thing, and they've seen that there's success across the country with it.
Well, now the only thing left to do is for everybody to get their gloves and head out to the ballpark. As I said, tonight is opening night for the Knights and the Cannonballers. The Honey Hunters follow on May 27th. I want to thank Dan Rakowski from the Knights, Scotty Brown from the Cannonballers, and Brandon Bellamy from the Honey Hunters. It's opening day. Enjoy it, everybody. I'm Eric Spanberg in for Mike Collins, and you've been listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.